T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
It's Beamaz and Beamer, News Radio 930 WBEN.
Beamaz and Beamer here with you on WBEN. And all morning we were telling you about the CDC expected to release some evidence behind its decision to ask vaccinated Americans to wear a mask once again in some parts of the country, a majority of the country, actually. And we are starting to get a little bit of that information. And it's part of the reason why we're asking the experts, right, Joe?
That's right. You know, you can hear us say the same thing, but when the experts say what we've been saying, I think people listen a little better.
It's one thing to hear from me and Joe. It's another to hear with from someone with an actual degree that's like framed on the wall, not shoved in a drawer somewhere. Dr. Amesh Adalja is joining us now from Johns Hopkins University, infectious disease specialist. And we're hearing a lot about this CDC, which I guess first we should start off with. We've been talking about a mistake on this show, at least, by the CDC of how much harm would it have been to release this information a couple of days ago when you're making these changes in the first place, or hold off on announcing the changes until this information was ready to be released, because a few days after... And saying, oh, we have the evidence coming, it didn't do a lot for confidence in that organization.
Yeah, certainly that when that decision was announced and the updated guidance, many people wanted to know more about the science that was driving that decision-making process. And I think the CDC kind of made an unforced error here because it made it much harder to understand. It was confusing. And, you know, I still have issues with that guidance, but being more transparent and proactive about really showing people the science as you make this decision would have, I think, blunted some of the criticism they got. And I think I still have questions about the value of the guidance, but in general, I think that they had a communication error here with how you want to let the public know about major shifts in guidance.
Speaking of that guidance, you said you still have some issues. What is your main issue with that guidance and the message it puts out?
Well, even by their own admission, when this is what they're talking about happening with vaccinated people is that there are some fully vaccinated people who get breakthrough infections that are associated with the same level of virus as people who were not vaccinated, which suggests that they could be contagious to others. They admit that this is a very rare occurrence and that it's not accounting for anything but a very small proportion of the transmission going on. So I don't know the value that you're going to get of having fully vaccinated people wear masks in terms of the trajectory of the pandemic, because we are in a pandemic of the unvaccinated. It is unvaccinated people who are infecting other unvaccinated individuals and who are the ones in the hospital. If you go through any hospital, and I'm sure that's the case in Buffalo, 99 or 96% plus are going to be not vaccinated. So this is something that illustrates that the vaccines are working, because these breakthrough infections that are occurring are not clinically significant, meaning they're very mild or with no symptoms at all, and that's a win for the vaccine. And having vaccinated people wear masks, I think you can not necessarily make that guidance, but you can say if you're somebody that's fully vaccinated and you're immunocompromised, you maybe should be wearing a mask in high risk situations so you don't get a breakthrough infection. Because most of the other breakthrough infections are very mild, and I don't think that we want to be in the business of changing policy based on something that's very rare and it's kind of clinically inconsequential when we have this huge cyclone of a problem with the unvaccinated. And I think that's what we need to be focusing on. And I wonder also if the guidance is going to increase vaccine hesitancy, because the people who aren't vaccinated now haven't seen the vaccine as a value. And now they're probably going to see it as less of a value, especially in those places in the country where there is higher substantial spread.
Well, what you're speaking to, it seems like there's the complete absence of what would have really been a very simple cost-benefit analysis of making this announcement, setting these guidelines, where, you know, what impact are we going to have on case rates? It seems like, you know, maybe minimal, judging on the not only the announcement, but who is likely to follow these new rules or guidelines. And you're going to have a big impact on public trust in the vaccines. And I don't know how no one was, you know, raising their hand in the boardroom at all.
It, to me, it's mind-boggling. And, you know, I've taken some criticism for being not supportive of the CDC guidance, but that's exactly what I see. I think they could have done this better. They could have said, there is this small risk. We're just letting you know about it. It doesn't change our guidance because it's really not something that's going to have a major impact on the trajectory of the pandemic. And, you know, the real focus has to be on getting unvaccinated people to wear masks and get vaccinated. That's what's causing our problem here. We're in a pandemic of the unvaccinated. And I think what we're finding is that we have a two-track pandemic. Some parts of the country, the Northeast particularly, are treating COVID more like other respiratory viruses because so many of their high-risk people have been vaccinated. But other parts of the country have been resistant to that, and it's the same parts that were resistant to masks earlier. They're resistant to vaccines. And I don't really know how you're going to – it's becoming more and more challenging because some of those people are going to dig their heels in even further. And now that they're being told that if you – suppose you live in Missouri and you get fully vaccinated, you still have to wear a mask. That's going to be something that they're not going to probably take to very well, even though we have seen some uptick in vaccinations. I think we're in a very odd place in this pandemic, and it's really sad because we have a 21st century solution to this pandemic, the vaccine, but yet we're kind of reverting back to these primitive solutions like masks.
You know, talking about the messaging, and you put this in your piece in The Hill, which is at my Twitter, at the Joe Beamer, and you're talking about breakthrough cases. And I think that's another thing that has really been miscommunicated. I keep on going back to the example of Frank Reich, and the head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. They call him a breakthrough case, yet he's asymptomatic and he's vaccinated. That really shouldn't be considered a breakthrough case, right? Because that shows that the vaccine worked against the virus.
Right. When you have these breakthrough cases that are mild, people should be cheering because that was because the vaccine stopped an infection from being worse than it was. The vaccines are working. The vaccines are designed not to stop every case, but to stop serious disease, hospitalization, and death. And they're doing that tremendously. All three of the vaccines available in the United States. But we have to draw a distinction between breakthrough cases and breakthrough disease. Are we seeing people that are fully vaccinated get breakthrough infections that land them in the hospital? Not to very high, to a very high degree. There are some, but it's really a minuscule number. The hospitals that have patients have unvaccinated patients. And I think we have to get to a point where we realize COVID is not going anywhere. This is going to be a disease we deal with all the time. It's going to be an endemic respiratory infection. And what we have to do is try and tame it by vaccinating high-risk individuals. And we've done that in many states. There are some states where there's exceptions, like Florida and in Kentucky and Arkansas and in Missouri and Nevada, Louisiana, that we have to continue to focus on. But this idea of COVID zero, or trying to stop every mild case or to stop people who are fully vaccinated from having a common cold-like illness, I really don't think that should be driving policy. The policy should be driven towards the unvaccinated.
You know, starting to just take a look at what the CDC was basing these new recommendations on, and it looks like they're kind of relying heavily on something that happened in Cape Cod, an outbreak of about 800 vaccinated people, or I'm kind of parsing through this as I'm reading it. I don't know if that was all vaccinated or if that's the total number, but it's looking at a Cape Cod on 4th of July weekend, which I would imagine was a pretty big party, and it's a pretty small area where there's going to be a lot of people close together, pretty prime for spreading out the virus. Do you take any issue at all with how the CDC is using just kind of this one case study and changing their recommendations based off of it?
That's very insightful on your part, and I was going to bring that up, so I'm glad you did. So, yes, what happened in Provincetown in Massachusetts, the question is how replicable is that, or how applicable is that to everyday life? because, yes, you're talking about a 4th of July party where people were packed together drinking and screaming and shouting. Is that representative of the average vaccinated person's life on a day-in and day-out basis? And how, so it may not necessarily be applicable to real-life situations. It might have been an extraordinary situation where they found out some important things about the virus, but how well that extrapolates to day-to-day living for the average person that's fully vaccinated, I think remains a question. So that's something that I think limits the kind of the force of that guidance, because it is based on basically a case study, an important case study, but one that may not really reflect what happens in everybody's life on an ordinary basis. And also, I'd want to know a little bit more. You know, they talk about the cycle threshold, which is a fancy term for how much virus the PCR machine picks up or how quickly it picks it up. I would want to know, you know, can they culture the virus from those vaccinated people? That would be another important question, not just that you're finding viral genetic material, but is there actually cultivatable virus there? Meaning, can it grow on cells?
Speaking to testing of vaccinated people, do you think let me rephrase how I was going to say this. Do you think vaccinated people should go through normal testing, or do you think because, as you mentioned, vaccinated people could test positive but not be sick, that could inflate cases when it really doesn't need inflating and send the wrong message?
Well, there definitely have been detections of what I call pseudo-outbreaks, because maybe, for example, a sports team might be just testing everybody irrespective of symptoms and irrespective of vaccination status. That, I think, needs to go away. We shouldn't be testing fully vaccinated asymptomatic individuals. The CDC guidance, however, has changed, and they say if you have a significant exposure and you're fully vaccinated, you should get a test 3 to 5 days after that exposure, which is a new thing that they put in there. I don't know the value of that. Clearly, though, if you're a symptomatic person, if you get symptoms that are consistent with COVID, you should get tested irrespective of whether or not you've been vaccinated. But for the asymptomatic, I don't know the value of it, although the CDC guidance has changed when there's significant exposures. But that screening to go into a TV studio, screening on a movie set, screening for major league sports teams, I think that probably does not need to be occurring unless you've got symptoms or some kind of an outbreak situation. I think the routine part is just picking up cases that are not really clinically relevant and really confounding the matter. And the press loves to magnify these, and I think it erodes confidence in the vaccine, because remember, the vaccines weren't designed to stop every breakthrough. They were designed for serious disease, hospitalization, and death, and they're off the charts when it comes to that.
Yeah, and it seems like even with this new information or what's being published from the CDC, that the vaccine is still holding up, even the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, despite some of those headlines we saw just a week ago with, oh, no, it might not be working as well with the Delta variant based off of, you know, one study instead of what we're actually seeing in the real world. There's a lot of, vaccine scare tactics almost. I don't know what else to call them going on in the last week that would lead you to believe that they don't really work at all, or that at the very least you need a cloth mask to make the vaccine work as intended.
Right. I think that's because people aren't really clear on what we want a vaccine to do. We want a vaccine to reduce the morbidity, the mortality of this disease, and that means stopping people from needing to be hospitalized, and it's working tremendously. And remember that vaccines are not force fields. They're not bug zappers. That's not how they work. They produce immunity that, once you're re-exposed, jumps into action and makes that infection much, much less, or aborts it, or doesn't allow it to be productive. That's the vaccine working. So when I see these breakthrough cases are all mild, I say that's a win for the vaccine. But the press reports it as that's a downside of the vaccine. It's the vaccine not working. But that's actually 1,000% wrong.
And to look at the general picture, and this is something we've been, you know, kind of saying throughout the week here, when you have vaccines readily available just about every corner, you walk into any supermarket or pharmacy here and you can get a vaccine, no problem, no appointment needed, no check-in online before or anything like that. You can go in and get it if you wish. Are we near a point where, if we're not seeing hospitalizations jump because of the Delta variant, we're not seeing deaths jump because of the Delta variant, vaccinated people are protected and the unvaccinated are making their choices too. In your opinion, are we near that point to just kind of leave most of this just behind us?
Definitely in certain states we are. The only problem is that in certain places, Missouri is one place, some parts of Florida, Louisiana, that the unvaccinated are causing a problem for our hospitals, that they're getting cases that are severe enough to land them in the hospital because there's high-risk people that haven't been vaccinated. That's the issue that we have. And I think the next step is for private employers to start thinking about mandating the vaccine as a condition of employment, because that will increase their workforce resiliency, increase their workplace safety. But, I mean, there comes a point where we're going to say that the unvaccinated have made their choice, and giving them money, giving them every incentive, giving them every opportunity to get the vaccine, and they still refuse it. I don't know how long you keep doing that before you say that we can't do anything more. And I think that's probably obviously something that the CDC has to think about, because it's not a good situation to be in. But I think we're increasingly getting to a point where the people that wanted to be vaccinated have all gotten vaccinated. We haven't met Joe Biden's 70% goal by July 4th. That we still haven't met it yet. And I don't think we'll meet it by August 4th. It's really trickling, although there has been some uptick, which is encouraging. I don't know what's going to happen. And I think we've never really been in this situation. People just assumed that people would want the vaccine and the U.S. would end this pandemic here because people would clamor for the vaccine the way they clamor for new iPhones. That's what I do when there's a new vaccine out, but that's just not what happened. And you can look and see what happened just across the border in Canada. They were really slow to get the vaccine to people, but when they got it, everybody got it.
So looking at a state like New York, because you mentioned Florida and Missouri, but looking at a state like New York, do you think any kind of mask mandate restrictions will have any kind of effect on the tiny surge that we're seeing in a county like Erie, here in a state where we do have 70% vaccine?
No, it depends. The people that we want to wear the masks, they're not wearing them, and they're not getting vaccinated. So the marginal benefit of having vaccinated people wear masks for that really small chance that they might transmit, I don't think that's going to really change the trajectory. That's kind of like a rounding error to me. I think it's not going to make a major difference, and there's a lot of downside to it. And I think we really have to focus on the unvaccinated. That's who's driving this. That's where the problem is.
Speaking of the unvaccinated, because we just got a text on our text board, and we hear this a lot. People who had COVID 3 or 4 months ago say, well, what about me? I have a natural immunity. Why should I go get in line for the vaccine? What should be the message to those individuals?
It's true that you do have natural immunity, and that immunity will likely make reinfection rarer for you than somebody who doesn't have that. And it also is likely to make your reinfection milder than it would be if you didn't have that immunity. But what we know is that immunity is unpredictable. We don't know the full duration of it. And we know, for example, in studies like what happened in the Johnson & Johnson trial in South Africa and the placebo arm, the people who didn't get the vaccine, there were a lot of breakthroughs in people who had been infected. And there the beta variant was very prevalent. So it is the case that natural immunity is something. It's not negligible. It's important. But it will get better and stronger and longer lasting with vaccine. And even just one dose of the Moderna or Pfizer vaccine probably is sufficient for a fully vaccinated individual. And I wish the CDC would embrace that data and actually say that, because that would increase vaccine uptake, because many people who have had COVID think they're just completely neglecting natural immunity. But I mean, there is data to show one dose is probably enough, and I think that would probably get some of those people vaccinated and increase their immunity and be better for all of us.
So much talk this week about the Delta variant, how it spreads, everything else, and a lot of attention on kids, because a big part of that CDC recommendation was continued masking in schools. And, you know, kids have suffered so much from the policies of COVID, but they suffer the least from COVID itself. And nothing, no data that I've seen has really changed that fact that, you know, being a kid, being, you know, under 10 or under 12 or whatever age that you really want to put at it, affords you amazing protection for whatever reason that is. Certainly not something I understand. But has anything changed in that? And, you know, a lot of people are wondering, because we were planning for maybe a normal school year, and now this week everything's kind of being thrown into the gear somewhere.
Nothing has changed. It is true that children are generally spared the severe consequences of disease. And for a child less than the age of 12 years of age, influenza and RSV are bigger threats and probably take more lives than COVID-19 does. So I do think one of the questions to think about when you're talking about small children is, would you do this for influenza? Because that's kind of comparative when it comes to smaller children. And I think that's something that people don't really think about. And it is true that children have suffered tremendously during the pandemic, not because of anything the virus did to them, but what adults did to them and what teachers' unions did to them. So I think that we really have to have in-school, in-person schooling as the norm, the default, and we have to do whatever we can to make that happen. And one of the things we can do is school districts can mandate teachers be vaccinated. The teachers demanded the vaccine, access to the vaccine, to open schools, which wasn't necessary because we had data that it could be done safely. They demanded access to it, but now they don't want to have a mandate for it. So I think teachers should be forced to get the vaccine as a condition of their employment. And that will help. That's the biggest thing that would make the resiliency of the school better. The more vaccinated people in a school, the safer it's going to be, the less disruptive it's going to be from COVID-19. So a vaccine mandate, that school districts should put a vaccine mandate in place for their teachers.
Dr. Umesh Adilija, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Always great to hear from the experts. And he's been with us a few times here on this program. Great to hear from Dr. Adilija. We'll be talking a little bit about what he said when we come back here, BMaz and Beamer on WBEN.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.